Hi, I'm Vern Andrews, creator of Captain Cannabis. You're listening to Q's House.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
Hello?
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 Is anybody there?
Is anybody there?
Quick!
And now, for those in attendance in the chat room and the residents podcasting around the world, get ready for Smash Mouth Talk Radio at its finest. From the penthouse to the outhouse, it's Q's House, featuring the best local music from around the globe.
This is a test of the emergency broadcast system.
This is not a test. This is Q's House.
My name is Q, and welcome to Q's House, one of the most unique internet radio shows and podcasts you will find anywhere else. We're not trying to be anything. We're not. We're just some good people hanging out, having a good time. We're a little sniff of cayenne pepper to make the system sneeze, and we like that. We get to talk to some of the most interesting individuals off the beaten path, and with any great house gathering, get to discover some really good music. Today, we've got a little bit of both. We're going to talk to Vern Andrew, musician, comic creator, and artist, about his brand new comic, 420. What we're primarily wanting to talk to you about is your brand new comic, 420.
It was published in the end of October, and okay. I've been busy getting stores and distributors and all that sorted out. It's available from Amazon.com, so anybody with a credit card and access to a computer anywhere in the world can order it from there. There's a number of stores local to me that have picked it up, and I'm talking with various distributors and stuff to get some wider distribution.
Now, where are you located right now?
I'm in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
We're actually carried on a Canadian internet radio station.
Oh, sweet.
So that ties in nicely. The comic is set in Seattle.
It is.
Is there a reason for setting it in Seattle and not Vancouver?
Yeah. If you remember the whole Roswell incident,
mm-hmm.
If you backtrack that, the first sightings of the UFOs were actually around Mount Rainier and Mount Baker. There's a heavy alien influence into the story. Roswell was just basically where the poor unfortunates crashed, but I'm setting it in Seattle to sort of set the mood and the tone for the story as it rolls on a little bit further. If you notice on the front of the cover, there's this really strange alien-looking game pod device, if you will.
That he gets at the end of the first magazine.
Right. That's actually based on an RCMP police report from further north. There was a situation where they were chasing a bank robber or something, and they ended up going into this this cave in the mountain somewhere, and the RCMP officers found this alien skeleton with this device on a chain around its neck. And of course, he was in hot pursuit of a bad guy, so he just made a note of it and moved on. And that sketch was actually a sketch taken from the police report that was filed.
Well, wow, this comic gets more unique by the minute. And there's also something else unique about it in the is the way that you're rolling it out and the different formats that it's available for people. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's originally designed to be a film, a feature film. I spent a fair bit of time in the film business, and that's really where the magic comes in. I mean, you're bringing drawings and ideas to life. I did spend an early part of my career in the comic book side, and during the middle part of my career, I actually went to college and became a computer scientist. And so I know the web, I know comic books, and I know film. Now, a character like Captain Cannabis isn't one that the mainstream investing community is going to come up and say, well, sure, we're going to put $20 million into that. It would be nice if they did, but I knew starting out that that would be really problematic. So I stepped back and said, well, what sort of creative way? The story is very creative. It's very outside the box. So how can I go about creating a structure to finance the production that's really outside the box? And I took a look at the shareware, and you're familiar, I'm sure some of your listeners are as well, that the software you can get on a shareware basis where if you like it, you contribute. And I thought, well, let's see if we can do a film financing project like that. The story, which is really important, I can do the drawings for, get them up on the web, then take those and repurpose them into a comic book, add some more value to it by putting it in color, putting some extra features in the book. And there's something very collectible about a book. I mean, comics are they're touchy-feely. You sit, in a campsite with a flashlight, they're a whole different thing from sitting in front of a computer screen. And that way, people that are enjoying the story and really want to see some interesting entertainment will buy the books, and it's the funding from the books that keeps the whole project rolling. The artwork is being done once because it's targeted for film. Mm-hmm. I do the artwork to film spec, so there's one set of artwork that's used through all the different.
And that's
media.
That's a lot harder than just a comic drawing. Because in a comic, if you've got a character in front of a background, you don't have to draw all the details behind that character. And that's very different if you're going to translate it into film, which is going to be a 3D environment almost.
Exactly, and that's been one of the issues I've been working with, because obviously there's a lot more drawing involved. The flip side to that is when you're doing a comic page and you do a panel, you're basically, you draw it and it's done, and you move on. When you're working for the screen, you do it in phases. You'll do your basic blocking of your scenes. You'll come back and do another pass and do all of your backgrounds. You're a draftsman at that point. But then you get into the finesse of the storytelling, where you're actually posing the characters. And it's nice because I can rough all of the character poses out and then take another pass and say, okay, I'm Marion now. And actually do what an actor does and get into the character of Marion. And so that if you notice, the screenplay, which is also posted on the web, has shifted a little bit when we get to the webisode, which shifts a little bit more when we get to the comic book, which will shift right until the final film is done.
It's neat. You can kind of see the evolution. So if you like something, you log on. It's okee.com, okee.com, and you go to the webisodes. It's almost like you're looking at the comic book. Some of it's in color, some of it's in black and white. Sometimes you look and it almost looks a little unfinished, and it's like you're getting a sneak peek at what you'll get if you were to buy the comic.
The color really adds a whole other dimension to it. I put some colors. Originally the webisodes were all black and white, and then when I got the color scenes done, I figured I would drop a few in just to give some sense of what the color would be like if somebody got the book, because I think it just adds a tremendous amount to the storytelling and the whole experience.
For people that don't know, and most of the listeners won't, set the story up. What's 420? It's not a pot comic per se. It's got a lot to do with it, but why don't you set the story up for people?
Okay, 420 is the middle story of a trilogy, which will probably end up being four, if not five, films by the time it's all said and done. I'll talk about this particular part of the story, and then if we have time, I'll backtrack and try to give a broad description of what the whole thing is about. Okay, so 420 is a love story between Hal and Marion. Hal is a loser, down and out roadie, he's sort of middle aged, and ends up sloughing gear around for a bunch of hack musicians. But one of the things that he does enjoy is his puff. He's got a cousin who actually is he was in the first Gulf War. He's a Gulf War veteran who got Gulf AIDS syndrome. He got sick when he was on his tour of duty. And of course, the government is denying that any of that has happened, even though there's overwhelming evidence to the contrary.
All true.
So he ended up moving up to Canada, as it is, and because his folks had a house and they passed away and left it to him. And he's got this little mountain hideaway where he grows some of the best puff around, which is where Hal gets his source. Now, Marion's been set up by this lawyer who is sort of working behind the scenes, and he's basically told her, well, you know, either sleep with me or get me some puff, and there's some other stuff going on. I don't want to ruin the whole story. So she's an absolute knockout babe and would normally not have anything to do with Hal, and, you know, Hal's a loser who would just die to get his hands on Marion, which is where the drama comes in. Now, it ends up basically going through a roller coaster ride. The first story is the introduction, which we introduce Marion and Hal, set up the events that she needs some puff. The next part of the story, which is what I'm working on now, I think the screenplay is still on the website, they actually start their journey. Hal lives on a boat that's leaking, which will have consequences later on in the film.
Sort of like Miami Vice, but not quite as sexy.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking down and dirty here. It's the wrong side of the tracks, for sure. So they go up to Mikey's, and while they're there getting their puff, and there's a bunch of magic stuff that happens up there, there's this spaceship that crashes with this little alien character by the name of Oki. Now, Oki, one of his treats is alien or cosmic pot, let's call it that, which has got an extra special kick. Which Hal ends up getting his hands on, and it ends up turning him into this character, Captain Cannabis. Now, as soon as aliens' spaceships penetrate into Earth, we've got all of the military people all up in arms, so that sets up our chase. And the antagonist in this particular film is the military-industrial establishment. So they're out to, you know, track down Hal, track down this alien, and put an end to it.
So we've got government conspiracy, sci-fi, and then some stoner comedy all rolled into one.
Yeah, it's Cheech and Chong. It's every conspiracy theory I could find. Just put in a blender, I hit frappe, and this is what we got.
Why call it 420? You know, there's so much more about the books and about the storyline. Why wouldn't you want to make it a little less conspicuous, or a title to reflect some of the other elements in it?
Oh, it was originally, the working title for it was called The Strange Attractor. And that's a scientific term that was related to Oki, because really it's a story about Oki. And this is just the middle part of it, as I said. I had, during the whole screenplay writing process, used a group called Praxis out of Simon Fraser University. The reader who did the analysis had some questions about that name being, you know, just a little bit too esoteric. Now, to sort of backtrack quite a bit, back in when I started my early comic career, one of the first characters that I created was Captain Cannabis. This was back in the 70s when, you know, that sort of thing was a lot more accepted than it is today. I mean, we had head shops on just about every corner. I started reading comic books by, you know, going in, finding them in the various head shops. So I created this character, Captain Cannabis, and sent it away to the government copyright office. And much to my surprise, I got this copyright certificate back. I looked at it and said, this is interesting, filed it away, and carried on in my life. So when I came around to actually renaming the story, as I was getting towards the end of the seventh draft, I was digging through some papers, and I came across the original copyright certificate. And I looked at it, and I read the date, and the date is April 20th, 1977. Now, of course...
That was an accident?
That was a totally freak accident. Everybody who's in the 420 culture knows what 420 is. And it's been a big part of popular culture, what, during the 80s, 90s? Well, 420 was a term that wasn't even known, let alone used, during the 70s. So I was sitting there looking at this, and of course, I'm aware that April 20th is 420, and 420 what it means. And I've got a character called Captain Cannabis, and 420 is the origin story of Captain Cannabis. And I've got a copyright certificate dated April 20th, and I said, my goodness, I have got the earliest documented reference between April 20 and cannabis that I'm aware of.
Oh, wow. And no one else challenges this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, nobody has come up and said you can't use 420. I mean, it's just a couple of numbers, certainly. You know, I've had some antagonism, and I've been doing some web promotion, and, you know, some people, every time I use the number, it's 420, my ads get erased. But if I use the words 420, everybody's cool with it.
Huh.
In terms of the character named Captain Cannabis, when I first registered the site, I had a few people come up and say, you can't use that, we created this character so-and-so. And we had a showdown in terms of, you know, okay, well, my date is April 20th, 77. What's your date? And they ultimately end up having to back off because I've got the earliest date.
Well, good for you. You've really turned drawing, you know, into a career. And you've gone about it in a lot of different ways. Do you have anything to say to, you know, kids who are just, you know, drawing, doodling themselves, you know, pouring themselves into art class in high school?
It's a passion. It's a way of life. Drawing is a way of seeing. They say music, the art of music is the art of listening. And, you know, the art of drawing is not the art of actually putting pencil to paper, but it's the art of seeing what is in front of you for what it is, not what you expect it to be. And that takes a long time to sort of develop that sight and sort of cut through the bullshit, if I can use the term.
Yeah.
Now, when you're drawing, it's a passion, and there were times when I would draw, you know, 12, 14 hours a day, crash for a few hours, get up and do it all over again. I guess some words that were given to me, sage words of advice that I would pass on is, you're born with thousands of really shitty drawings inside you, and the sooner you get those out of you, the sooner the really good ones come out. If nothing else, just sit there and just draw the shitty ones, and, you know, keep them. I keep all my drawings, even the bad ones. I look back and I cringe, but, you know, that's all part of the evolution.
Hey, at least now you have proof you got better.
Yeah, you bet. Well, sometimes I look and I wonder, you know.
In addition to 420, you also have a children's story out.
Joey and the Little Blue Bike, is that
yeah.
what you're referring to?
Yeah.
That's a screenplay that I wrote, and it was just about to go into production. Actually, I flew out to Toronto, and I was meeting with CBC, that's a big broadcaster up here in Canada, to do the final sign on the dotted line, and that very morning, the government cut back all their funding to CBC. So my project, along with a number of others, hit the cutting room floor, as they say.
So that's kind of a problem that we have here, too, in the United States. Is the cutting of funding, you know, for public television and public radio.
Funding for, yeah, everything. Unless you're building bombs or bullets, something that kills and maims, you're in like, real tough times these days. And that's why I've gone about doing this project in terms of funding it the way I have. Because, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that you know, really care, but, you know, they don't have a way. It's big businesses controlling it, and big businesses controlled by government, and, you know, it's the government, frankly, that's the bad guy here. And
are you worried that developing a project like 420 is going to hurt you if you go, you know, if you go for other projects? You know, like, you know, you produce a children's story, maybe someone, it's a great story, but they want to back off with it because you also did 420.
Frankly, I don't care. That might have been a concern earlier in my career, but, you know, I'm past the 50 mark at this point, and you know, this is the project, and it will probably be one of the last of my career. You know, some people will like it and some people won't, and one of the things you learn as you go through life is you can't please all the people all the time. And when you end up in a situation where you compromise yourself, you say, well, if I act this particular way, these people will do this sort of thing for me. You don't have that passion to you anymore. Like, you're compromising, and that's why we've got so much crap coming out now, because everybody's just doing the compromises to get the dollar.
Let's talk about Vancouver a little bit. Beautiful city. Mm-hmm. The only thing is I walked for blocks for signs that said best brew in Vancouver, and all I got were coffee shops.
I think that has to do with the fact that Starbucks started out in Seattle and they migrated up here.
All I wanted was a cold beer.
We do have some micropubs. I think BC is better known for its BC Bud and Wreck Beach and beautiful women.
And everybody there looked hot. And I'm from New York, and that's not the case all the time there. Now, do they still have the whales all over the place?
Those are weird. I saw them around for a while. I don't know where they came from or where they went, but no, they're not all over the place anymore.
Oh, the last couple times I had been, and I haven't been in a few years, they were on every corner. I was going to ask you if you had a favorite. Mine was Orca Presley.
No, I actually just kind of looked at those and said, those are pretty weird. I'm not sure what they're doing in City Hall these days. Right now, the big buzz, they're getting ready for the 2010 Winter Olympics. So, you know, they're basically taking a Hoover vacuum cleaner to the city. They're moving all the marginal people, quote-unquote, out, and all of the construction sites that have been holes in the ground, they're starting to fill them up. That's part of, I got to mention the whole Mark Emery thing. I think that's mm-hmm. a large part of why they're cracking down on him, is he's sort of the center of Vancouver's Amsterdam row there.
Right.
And I think a large part of what they're trying to do is to sort of shuffle him out of sight and out of mind before the 2010 Olympics.
And it's so many people think that, you know, Canada is just the promised land of, you know, promised land of pot. Is this true that we're hearing down here, or is there a catch to it?
Well, you know, I've been to the States quite a bit, and there's just as much down in your side of the border as there is up here. Our society is a lot more tolerant. We don't have as much of the zealousness that I think you people have down there. And I think a lot of that has to do with we've got so much space between us. It's like I don't have to get into somebody's face and say, well, you know, you're doing this and I don't like it, so I'm going to make a law to make you do what I want to do. It's like, well, you know, you're not doing what I want to do, so I'll just move over there. You go to a place like New York, as you say, and everybody's in each other's face. I mean, it's just totally crowded, and, you know, that might just be part of it. We don't have Republicans up here, I think goes a long way to why we're a lot more of a tolerant society.
Kindler and gentler, we got that. Now, you're also a musician. You've got a CD out called Wave Makers. How did you... Do they simultaneously come, you know, making music and drawing and art? Or is music something you picked up as a secondary?
I guess that the first time I got interested in music when I was about six, and I watched this flamingo player on the Ed Sullivan Show and was just totally amazed. And then a few years later, I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, and I said, my God, they stole my idea. But I started out with guitars. And then I, you know, went through the whole band thing and the egomaniacal bandmates, and I just got somewhat disgusted and tossed it in and moved to drawing, because it's something that I could do totally myself. I didn't have to deal with a whole lot of other personalities. You know, in my own naivety, I felt that there wasn't as much politics involved in art, but of course there is. But at least on the outset, I didn't have to struggle as much with bandmates. I put the music off to the back burner, and it wasn't until probably about 10 years ago, as I started directing and producing more and working more and more with musicians, that I was finding myself at a bit of a loss, because you know, I'm doing a score for a commercial, and I say, well, I need it sad here. The musician would go away and they'd do, you know, what they felt was sad, and ultimately it wouldn't be anything close to what I had imagined. So I went through some personal things where I was out of contact with my young son for a while, and I figured, well, I've got a fair bit of time on my hands now. So I went out and bought a guitar and just started getting back into it and studying music theory and whatnot. And that's sort of how it grew. The songs that are on the website, vernandrew.com, that will ultimately end up in the CD, those are sort of works in process, so as I come up with a new idea, a new bass line, I'll turn it into a song. I'm quite enjoying it. I don't want to turn it into work like I did art. You tend to start losing your passion for it as soon as it becomes work. And music, they call it playing for a reason. The one song there, Open Your Mind, actually deals with the topic of the story anyway. So there's a natural tie into the book and the movie and everything else. The Dwellers on the Threshold are the ultimate antagonist, and the song goes into, you know, the Dwellers. It's kind of neat. I found the algorithm. Somebody took the algorithm from Mr. Speak and Spell.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually turned it into a plug-in. So I didn't have my setup for recording vocals at the time, and I just plugged the lyrics in, and it's actually Mr. Speak and Spell singing it.
Well, I like that a lot. So I've heard it, and as soon as I did, I went, wow, he does music too. Well, we certainly wish you luck in that. We thank you for sharing your music, and we also thank you for sharing your comic with us. I know at least I'm going to be visiting the website often to catch up on all the latest and get previews of what's coming next. It doesn't matter where they are, they can go to Amazon.com. Just search for 420, and you will find him. Vern, you want to give us all your websites again?
Okay, the main site is okee.com, okee.com, with the three W's ahead of it. Okee is the little alien that will show up a little bit later. You can also get at the same site by captaincannabis.com. It's the same website, it's just got a different skin on it, so it gives a bit of a different visual appearance. My personal website is vernandrew.com, that's VERNEANDRU. The best way to go about it is go to Okee, OKEE, and you'll find links to the other sites from there.
Yep. Comics, previews, you can get prints, posters, postcards, do it. It all goes to a good cause, which is producing this book.
And there's a DVD coming out shortly.
We'll be looking forward to that, as well as following how the story of Okee unfolds. Vern, we'd like to thank you for being such a great guest. For all of you out there, remember, good guests are naughty guests, and naughty guests are punished.
Don't worry, I'm not going to hurt you. Ooh, big hug.
Log on to Q'sHouse.com. We know how to pass the time while you're surfing the web for downloads involving girl on girl on guy on goat. Sickos, perverts, and Republican majority leaders welcome. Whoa.